All right, how's it going, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to episode 8 of Ant and Big Red vs. the World. As always, I'm Big Red.
As always, I'm Average Ant.
And we're going to put together a show today that hits a little close to the heart here as we get going. We're going to dive into a Seattle Seahawks vs. Oakland Raiders matchup in London. As you know, that's Ant's team versus my team, Go Hawks. Shout out the 12s. So we'll dive into that. Then a lot of crazy stuff going on in the last week and a half, I guess. McGregor and Khabib fought, and then they fought again, and again, and again. So we'll get into that and all the craziness that went on after that fight and everything leading up to it. Then we're going to bounce back into Jimmy Butler. I guess he's a show favorite now. Or he just is continuing to do a lot of ridiculous things that we can laugh at. Yeah. So without further ado, let's get started with that a little rivalry matchup, the Seahawks versus the Raiders. Ant, you guys are 1-4, so there's a 1 in your record, so you can go first.
All right. I guess, so for those of you who don't know, Seahawks and Raiders are going overseas and playing in London this weekend. Like Jake said, or Big Red, sorry, called you by your legal name. But it's a low-key, it's one of the more low-key rivalries, I would say, in the NFL. Not many people really think of it as a rivalry because they mostly play in preseason. But it's definitely a low-key rivalry, at least in the state of Washington. But it's really a matchup between one team, which is the Seahawks, that still has a sliver of hope and turning things around a little bit, possibly making the playoffs. And then another team, obviously the Raiders, who just need to go into full tank mode at this point. So I guess both of them aren't in the best situations, like I just said. Seahawks still have, they can still turn around a little bit. Obviously the Rams are in their division, so they're not going to win the division or anything, but there's still hope that they could, possibly get a wild card. And the, something else that's a little intriguing to me is the coaches. John Gruden is probably on the hottest hot seat in the NFL right now, or at least he should be. His $10 million a year contract has started off to an 1-4 record, and honestly, it should be 0-5 at this point. They got a little help from the refs against their game against the Browns. That's neither here nor there, I guess. But John Gruden is definitely boiling on his seat right now. And something else that I kind of have a question about is Pete Carroll. And he's not necessarily on a hot seat because no one's really expecting anything out of the Seahawks or anything. But I'm wondering if he's on his way out, you know. The Seahawks, Legion of Boom, is no more. Obviously not the same team that they were during their potential dynasty that Pete Carroll helped build. So, I mean, like transitioning into a new era, I'm wondering how long Pete Carroll's still going to be there.
Yeah, I don't know. I 100% agree. I mean, like you said, there are two teams that are struggling, I guess, but in kind of very – nah, not very different. I would say somewhat different trajectories. Like you said, the Raiders are 1-4. I mean, honestly, the best case scenario now is probably to tank and get a high draft pick. So then maybe you can take a player like of Khalil Mack's caliber or something, because I don't know how else you're going to get them on the roster. Just kidding. We all know Gruden to trade him away.
Yeah, it's hard to find a pass rusher.
But in all seriousness, like you said, John Gruden, maybe he's not actually on the hot seat because it is the start of his contract. But, I mean, I agree with you. I think he should be. I mean, he came in, was supposed to set a precedent, some kind of change. all he's really done is trade away their best defensive player because he couldn't agree to just pay him. And their offense is looked as mediocre as it has in years past. I mean, the revamped receiving core with Jordy Nelson and company is not exactly stepping up. I mean, Marshawn Lynch is doing okay. That's actually one of the pieces where I think the Raiders could have success against Seattle is running the football. Marshawn's averaging like 4.3 yards per carry. Not terrible. I mean, it's not going to carry an offense though, and the Raiders kind of need that. So I don't know. Like I don't know. It doesn't seem like the Raiders particularly have a direction right now. I mean, you thought they could be close to competing if Derek Carr could play at his kind of close to MVP caliber they did a few years ago. But I mean, he's just not. And whether that's Gruden's coaching and offense, I don't know. On the flip side, Seattle's 2-3. They've lost a few heartbreakers to the. Now the Rams, the Bears, and the Broncos, and I mean, I'll take that back. The Bears wasn't a heartbreaker. They played really bad and were somehow close because Trubisky wanted to throw picks. But Pete Carroll, maybe not on the hot seat, like you said, because the Seahawks weren't expected to do a whole lot. But I mean, at the same time, I do get this weird feeling that Pete Carroll seems like he's almost like 1 foot out the door. And I mean, whether that's retirement or he has a bad year or two, and then the kind of consensus starts to be maybe Pete Carroll wasn't that great of a coach, but just had a ton of talent, which I don't necessarily agree with. But I mean, I could definitely see the narrative turning to that if this Seahawks like reboot, not rebuild, doesn't like kick up. I mean, there's a lot of young players and talent, but I mean, Pete's one of the oldest coaches in the NFL, if not the oldest. So, I don't know. From that coaching standpoint, yeah, I kind of agree. It's interesting. Gruden probably isn't on the hot seat because he's so new, but he should be. Pete Carroll may never be on the hot seat just because of what he's actually done for Seattle is bringing a championship. But I think if Pete leaves in the next couple years, I think it would be of his own accord, either by retirement or pursuing a different opportunity, but I'm not sure that he would pursue another opportunity this late in his life, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, when I brought that up, that's exactly what I was thinking too. That he's not going to leave Seattle. He's not definitely not going to get fired. I don't think he's going to leave Seattle and find another coaching job. I mean, maybe I could see going back to college and coaching a team in college, but other than that, he's definitely going to retire after his stint in Seattle is done. Whether it's in the next season or two or the next like five seasons, I don't know.
How they're gonna do.
Yeah, but I don't know, as a Raiders fan at least, John Gruden's definitely on a hot seat. he was on the hot seat the second he signed that contract, and it was revealed that he's getting $100 million over 10 years. To get that, you have to bring a championship. And to start out 1-4 should be 0-5. And possibly, well, not possibly, you should be tanking at this point to get that big of a contract as a coach and to end up tanking your first year is honestly, it's pretty much unacceptable. I wasn't like, at least the first couple of years, I'm not expecting a championship or anything. The Raiders obviously saw their issues to work out with their defense and Derek Carr's inconsistencies that he showed last season. But I was expecting at least a playoff berth, if not finishing close to making the playoffs. But John Gruden obviously disappointed there, and I guess my biggest fear is he's not gonna turn around, but the Raiders are gonna turn it around a little bit and finish like 7-9 or 8-8 and end up missing out on getting a top pick.
I think you're kind of right. Still, to me, it seems like it would be such a major blow up to just drop a guy, like to fire a guy that's on the first year of his contract. Terrible contract as it is. But I mean, you're right though. Like, he should be on the hot seat. He's come into a team that had an all-world defensive player. I'm gonna beat that to death, by the way, because giving up Khalil Mack is idiotic in a team in rebuild mode now. I mean, they got a lot of draft picks from the Bears, so if they're in full rebuild mode, which I mean, the organization must have okayed, because you're not giving up Khalil Mack if you're trying to hang on to a chance at contention. So I mean, to get those draft picks back from the Bears, that's great. Even better if the Bears don't do as well as they feel like they're going to. But like, player wise, like, there's not a lot to build off. Derek Carr has 7 touchdowns and 8 interceptions this year. Marshawn Lynch is old. He's not your future running back. Jalen Richards, not your future running back. There's not a lot to get excited about when you look at their roster. I mean, the biggest thing you get excited about is, well, Derek Carr was really good a couple years ago. If he can get an offense that kind of caters to that, then he can be a good quarterback in the NFL. I mean, that's really your only building block here, is now Gruden will have to go about it by buffing up the receiving corps, either signing a defensive playmaker or drafting one. Doesn't look good in Oakland right now. I mean, you said it. But there's reason for optimism with those draft picks, so yeah. I don't know, man.
I guess an underlying story of this game too is Marshawn Lynch. I guess the 1 yard line thing in the Super Bowl, and coming off of a week where obviously not the same exact situation, but very similar. Ball at the 1 yard line. Derek Carr throws a pick, so I guess it'll be interesting to watch that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. You look at the Raiders, and it's not a lot, but there's a few older Seahawks, Bruce Irvin, Marshawn Lynch, for Marshawn, at least, I believe it is the first time, not preseason wise, that he's matching back up against the Seahawks. Beast mode versus the Seahawks defense that's allowing 129 rushing yards per game. It'll be interesting to see what he does. I think as we get more into actual game preview kind of stuff, I think Marshawn Lynch is going to have to pound the ball. He's going to have to carry it 20 to 25 times and be somewhat successful for the Raiders to have a chance. That is the Seahawks' biggest weakness, is rushing defense. Zeke gashed him. Todd Gurley had 3 or 4 touchdowns or whatever. Only had like 60 yards, but irrelevant. The Rams had like 140 total. I think that Marshawn Lynch is a huge matchup to watch, and if the Seahawks can stop him, then they might be able to force the Raiders into being one-dimensional and kind of capitalizing on those 8 turnovers or 8 picks that Derek Carr has this season, because the Seahawks defense is turnover thirsty right now. They're making a lot of plays. They picked off Goff a couple times. They picked off Dak Prescott a couple times, and picked off Josh Rosen once too. So, I mean, that's Seahawks defense is creating a lot of turnovers, and it's offsetting the high amount of yards that they're allowing. And so I think that's a big area where the Seahawks can take advantage of, is turnovers.
Yeah, for sure. I guess if this game was happening a couple years ago, it'd be a little more high stakes, I guess. We'd actually be debating a little bit, but since I'm pretty much on the Raiders tank bandwagon right now, I'm wanting the Seahawks to win. So,
good news is I think that they are. I think the Raiders are one of the worst defenses they've faced so far, easily. Cardinals maybe the next closest, but I don't know, man. There's really not a lot I see going for the Raiders. The one thing is, I guess this is the third international game that the Raiders have played in their history, and this is the first one for the Seahawks. So I mean, the Raiders have a little bit of experience. I guess they've been to London. They know what it's like. Even though Gruden had him travel today. I believe they're leaving today on Friday to go to, and they'll be there on Saturday. It's a 14-hour flight. I thought that was interesting, but
yeah, probably the best thing to do, you know. Get your players limited time to get acclimated to the surroundings.
I mean, that was my thought too, but I mean, I guess I don't know. The Raiders have been there before, so I feel like the players would know or speak up if they didn't want something like that. But
yeah,
one way or another, my prediction is Seattle 34, Oakland 20. I think that the Raiders are still going to put up some points. Marshawn's going to get some yards, but the way the Seahawks offense has been grinding the last couple weeks, running the football, and they're averaging 180 yards per game the last 2 weeks, around like 4.4 or 4.5 yards per carry, with Chris Carson and Mike Davis both just going off. Mike Davis has 3 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks, so look for the Seahawks to pound the ball and Russell Wilson to take advantage and get some touchdowns on play action, and the Seahawks to roll through Oakland,
yeah,
or London, I guess.
If you got Russell Wilson on your fantasy team, it's a good week to start him. So.
I agree with that. Raiders pass defense is no bueno. All right, so got that little rivalry out of the way. Shout out Raiders fans, shout out Hawks fans. Hope you enjoyed the piece. Next piece that we're going to get into, though, is a little more in-depth, kind of out of my normal realm of sporting, I guess, but it's the McGregor and Khabib fight and after-party fight, after-fight. As we get into this, the fight itself, Khabib wins by submission in the fourth round. He's kind of in control most of the fight. Khabib's undefeated. McGregor holds his own for a few rounds, even gets some good counter shots in the second round, or in the third round, sorry. A little bit of a comeback. It's just nothing. The fight was close when they were on their feet, but Khabib on the mat was just dominating McGregor, and you saw that as he eventually put him into submission in the fourth round. Khabib, he earned the fight, he earned the victory, but that's not what anybody's talking about. It's not what anybody cares about, because immediately after Khabib wins the fight, he goes over. Dylan Danis, training partner of McGregor's, John with him, and from there, Khabib John back and then jumps the ring and launches himself at Dylan Danis, and fights break out, pure chaos. McGregor's up, he's running around, he's trying to climb over the ring. He gets in a fight with Khabib's cousin, who jumps into the ring, and it's pure chaos. Security police trying to break things up. As soon as they seem to slow one thing down, somebody else jumps in a ring and starts fighting. McGregor and Khabib's cousin went at it pretty good. I'm going to butcher this name, but Zubaira Tuchkagov, or Tuchkagov Shishkabob, as I've said earlier, because I can't pronounce it. But he leaped into the ring last second, started fighting McGregor from behind before he's pulled away and taken by security. And that's something that he said that he would do outside in interviews and things. He literally said that he wants to fight McGregor in the parking lot after the fight. For him to leap in and attack there, it's interesting. Doesn't necessarily show that he's in Khabib's corner, but more that he just hates McGregor, like a lot of people seemingly do. Overall, it's an insane piece of chaos. So just a lot of fighting. And what were your thoughts on the brawl?
I guess first thoughts, it's pretty entertaining. I won't lie. The after brawl anyway. But ultimately, it's not a good look at all for the UFC. Obviously the UFC, it's probably the most like physical and brutal sport there is out. But that doesn't excuse this from happening.
Not at all.
Reminiscent of Malice in the Palace, except for a lot more people fighting, and these are actually trained fighters whose job is to fight and try to knock somebody out. So I guess from the whole fighting, jumping into the stands that Khabib did, and Khabib's cousin running into the ring, it's a really bad look. And I guess another bad look is the bans and suspensions and whatever that the UFC has brought down. So like you're saying pre-show, they banned Khabib's cousin, I believe is what you said.
Yep.
And I guess the biggest thing that's coming from that is Khabib, I guess they're threatening to not pay him. I guess it's pending, like you said, pre-show.
Yeah, they're withholding the $2 million from the fight.
And he's actually threatening to quit, which is something that I think is good for Khabib, standing up for himself and his family pretty much. Like, obviously, I don't agree with his cousin jumping into the ring and trying to fight McGregor. And like you said, it's more of a, he doesn't like McGregor and less of him standing up for his cousin. But I think it's good for Khabib to take that stand and threaten to quit, because he's undefeated, 27-0, one of the best fighters in the UFC right now, in his prime. And so wouldn't it be good for the UFC if this situation caused him to quit? I mean, obviously he's suspended, but to retire or take his talents to somewhere else, like another fighting promotion, I guess I would say, would be really bad for the UFC.
I 100% agree. So Khabib, he's very, very angry with all the punishments and things that are going down. I mean, like, he's coming off a fight against the UFC's golden boy, Conor McGregor, and where he beat him soundly. There wasn't much debate there in that fight. And then to immediately leap into this chaotic brawl, obviously it brings punishment down on yourself, but Khabib's really upset about it. And I can kind of see why, because it really seems to me like a lot of the punishments and things are heavily weighed against Khabib. So, I mean, the big comparison, you already said it, the $2 million for the fight for Khabib is being withheld pending the investigation of the UFC commission. Conor McGregor's already got his $3 million for the fight, which was more than Khabib was making anyway. Khabib and McGregor both suspended 10 games. So, I mean, that seems even there, except for the fact that McGregor's still being paid and Khabib isn't. For that fight, at least. Khabib has gone on pressers when Dana White has been quoted in saying that Khabib's cousin and Zubaira Tuchugov, he literally said, they'll never fight here. They will never fight here. Essentially alluding to them being banned. And upon hearing this, the presser that Khabib held talks about him saying, if you ban Zubaira, I'm going to leave the UFC. It's unfair. You haven't done anything about the comments and things that McGregor said about his religion, his family, himself. And then he also alludes to a chair that was smashed into one of his bus's windows, allegedly by McGregor's crew. Khabib just seems very, very upset that all of these things keep piling up on him, and McGregor seeming to have gotten away with a slap on the wrist by the UFC and by Dana White. And I mean, from that, it's not super surprising, as McGregor is kind of the UFC golden boy. He's what has brought a ton of popularity to the UFC. And so from there, I mean, I understand where Khabib's upset and everything, but I mean, at the end of the day, he started a brawl after his fight with McGregor that he won, that he could have just held the title, had a major W for that day, his whole crew, everything. Just, you basically, by beating McGregor in the ring, you've done infinitely more things than you could do out of the ring to offend him. By beating him in the ring, you've shown I'm literally better than you in the competition that you sit here and talk spit on everyone in. But he then gets into a brawl, and now he's upset because he's getting in trouble, and it's like, there's video of you you starting it. You're the one that jumped out of the ring. You're the professional fighter that jumped out of the ring to attack. Yes, it's another fighter, but to attack a bystander that's watching your fight. And so, I mean, it'd be a bad look for sure if Khabib retires from the UFC or leaves the UFC, but I mean, I know Dana White doesn't want to do that. That's why he gave him a suspension and didn't ban him right there for fighting as well. But it's a bad look for the UFC all the way around. I mean, whether Khabib stays or goes, you still have a guy that jumped out of the ring and started a brawl after a fight. So, I don't know. It's a tough spot for Dana White and the UFC.
Yeah. I guess I feel like it's more of a personal attack, I guess, on Khabib instead of professional. Because, I mean, like, no doubt, like, he should be suspended for sure. And to withhold all of his money is... it's stupid. I guess I understand fining him maybe, taking a percentage of what he earned for starting all this, but the man like earned that money, dude. And he didn't like he won too.
For real.
So, and it's wrong that the loser fighter gets his money, and the winning fighter who's the champion, doesn't get any percentage of his so far yet. So I think that's pretty ridiculous.
It's whack. No, yeah, I mean, it's unreal. To me, I think that they should withhold both the fighters' monies or none of the money. I mean, it's at the end of the day, yeah, fine him. Fine him $500,000. I don't care. But they brought all the money. It's a situation that's like, super similar to me, at least when I just say it out loud here, is to like college football and all the fans and money and funding that the players bring in. It's like the situation's similar in that those players aren't getting anything. Khabib's not getting anything of that $2 million that he's owed, even though him and McGregor brought it all to the UFC. So, I mean, it's obviously, it's a small sample size and not the same, but I don't know. It's messed up, and to me at least, McGregor seems to be treated on a high, like treated at a higher degree of care and on a higher pedestal than Khabib is. And like I've said it the whole time, McGregor is the UFC's golden boy, and I like McGregor. I think he's fun. I think he's exciting for the UFC and good for the UFC, but I mean, at a certain point, like, this treatment is unfair. I mean, McGregor didn't press any charges. The reason you're not pressing charges is because you engaged in the fight and you feel that the fight was warranted. So, I mean, there has to be some blame on McGregor, but it just doesn't seem like that's happening, and it seems like Dana White is kind of just going after Khabib and gonna take him and his crew down as kind of penance for this major screw up in the whole UFC.
Yeah, man. You covered pretty much all I had left. It's just not a good look for UFC and Khabib's team. It's just tough.
I 100% agree. With that, we'll go from one bad look to possibly an even worse look. The Jimmy Butler and the Timberwolves saga continues. And you can, I mean, get us going. You can really pick anywhere because this is like a six-layer cake out here. I don't even know.
Yeah, so I guess the first part of this, which is probably the most funny and entertaining part, or I guess I'll backtrack a little bit. For anybody that doesn't know, Jimmy Butler asked for a trade. He doesn't think the players, specifically Karl-Anthony Towns, or I guess more specifically Andrew Wiggins, don't give as much effort as they should be. So he wants out of Minnesota. So I guess With that covered, he didn't show up to training camp or anything, but this week he showed up to his first practice, and he decides to take the third string players, and they were listed. I'm not 100% sure how accurate it was, but it was a bunch of no names, like dudes that alternate, that have two-way deals, so swing between the G League and the NBA. And he took them and took on the starters, which I'm not 100% sure. Like, I know for sure it was Kat and Andrew Wiggins, but I'm not 100% sure who else was on their team. I wasn't there. But so he takes them on and just pretty much demolishes them on the court and mentally too. He was yelling at them. There's a report that Kat got the ball in the post while Jimmy was guarding him. He said he's not going to do a effing thing or something like that, or he ain't going to do poop for keep it PG-13. But and so Kat just ends up passing the ball back out. And to me anyway, this part of the saga definitely says a lot more about Kari Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. And like, this is a practice. It's not a game. There's no pressure here. You know, Jimmy Butler most likely hasn't talked to anybody on the team. You know, he's going to be coming at you at this practice, and you're 7 foot. Jimmy Butler's like 6'6", I think. He's small. He's smaller, I guess. He has his wingspan is super small too. So you got a good half foot on this guy. In the post, you're one of the best offensive centers in the league, and you just end up passing the ball out, dude. Like, there's no cameras there. Like, what worst case scenario? What, he's not gonna block your shot. Worst case scenario, you put up a shot and miss. So like, that lack of I don't even know how to describe it. Like, I guess killer instinct, kind of. No. I guess.
I agree. So I think I just want to say something on that. Like, yeah, like you're saying that. So to me, like, there's no fans, there's no cameras, there's nothing. Like you said, worst thing, you get blocked, whatever. But to me, that just shows like the level of like, I mean, a kind of a level of disconnect. So Jimmy Butler, I'm sorry, but in any competitive situation, you're a former athlete, I'm an athlete, any competitive situation, whether it's pickup basketball or ping pong, when somebody's talking smack to you and you're like, you're going to compete. You want to give everything you have to just shove it back in that guy's face and be like, what's up? Jimmy Butler goes to this practice and blatantly yells and verbally abuses Kat and Wiggins, calling him soft at one point, like you said, guarding Kat in the post and saying he can't do a thing against me. And Kat passes it out. Oh my goodness. Like, that shows me that Jimmy Butler is literally just verbally abusing these guys, and they're too soft to do anything about it. I mean, obviously it's a small sample size. Some reporter, whatever, might have seen this one play and blown it up. But I mean, at the same time, Karl Anthony Towns isn't showing that mental toughness to bounce back and be like, hey, I'm the best player on this court. I don't care what you do, what you say. I'm going to prove it to you. Instead, it's kind of like, I really imagine it as like just a super awkward situation for Karl Anthony Towns. Like, he's in the post. He's about to maybe put up a hook, and Jimmy Butler says that, and Karl is like, oh geez, what if he's right? Man, this is uncomfortable. Here, Andrew, you take the ball. I'll let you continue, but I just had to pop in. I think that really shows the disconnect between Jimmy Butler and the players on the team right now.
Yeah, that all goes into the whole reason why Jimmy wants out. This is a good situation for Karl Anthony Towns, at least, because I guess everybody's out on the Andrew Wiggins train. Mostly everybody is just writing him off as someone who's really gifted but just doesn't really care at the end of the day. So I don't think there's much hope for him. But for Kat, this is a moment for him to show Jimmy Butler that like, he could be competitive and he could want to win, but instead he doesn't take him on, he passes the ball out. which is, it's just ridiculous. And I guess one more little thing. I've seen a lot of people on Twitter saying that, like, Cat took the high road and stuff. Like, dude, he got punked. He got punked.
He did.
Straight up, he got punked. There's no high road. He got punked by his own teammate, who's a half foot shorter than him, and I don't know how many pounds lighter than him, who has small arms and everything. Like, he's a great defender, but, I mean, there's no guard in the league that could handle a center. Like, just straight up like that, and he just let him punk him. And that says a lot about Karl-Anthony Towns and the player that he is. Like, he's a great offensive talent and all. Not good on defense. I'm not going to say he doesn't have no heart, but he definitely lacks competitiveness. And I also see a lot of people on Twitter saying that that they'd rather have Karl-Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler. But I definitely have to disagree with that. At least, and like, I guess I understand if you're building a future, yeah, you want Kat, he's younger. But I mean, if I need one season right now and I need to make the playoffs, I'm going with Jimmy Butler.
It'd be stupid not to.
Yeah. I mean, it was proven that Karl-Anthony Towns can't lead that Minnesota team, at least. Obviously, it's not the best roster, but when Jimmy went out, he couldn't lead that roster at all. But I guess the second half of this incident, anyway, is Jimmy Butler going out to front office, which is something I don't really like that. That's something where I'll disagree with that. I don't really like that. He, as a player, like, you shouldn't be going out the front office at all. Like, they make the decisions and everything. And at the end of the day, they're not a player, you know. They're signing your checks, pretty much. So I think it's wrong for him to do that. Obviously, he's fueled by emotion, but that still doesn't justify that.
I agree. For me, I don't like any of what Jimmy Butler has done aside from requesting the trade like a week or a couple weeks ago or whatever it was. I mean, he skips all these practices, then he comes in, or so he requests a trade, doesn't get the trade. A trade falls through with Miami that was supposedly going to send Jimmy Butler there and send Josh Richardson, Deion Waiters, and a first-round pick back. Medicals were exchanged. Tom Thibodeau apparently tried to get more picks out of Pat Riley and was called, quote, a mother effer. And so then that the closest thing to getting Jimmy Butler out of Minnesota falls through because Tom Thibodeau doesn't want to give up Jimmy Butler. And, I mean, you get why. I mean, Jimmy Butler took the third strings and told them all why, because you can't win without me. So, I mean, Thibodeau's holding on to him. Jimmy Butler's mad, not going to practices, not going to training camp, not playing in the preseason. And he shows up in the middle of the week and to me, it seems like he literally showed up just to do this. Like he had in his mind, like, I'm going to go to this practice and I'm just going to lay into these guys. Now, he did it in a unique way by taking all the bench players and then beating the starters, but like you said, the roster wasn't great to begin with, so I don't know. That tells you a lot about the Minnesota players and Jimmy Butler's skill, I guess, but at the same time, it's like, what is Jimmy Butler doing? To me, it's now he's attacking the front office, now he's attacking his own players, he's attacking his head coach. It's just, you're not traded yet. You're still on this team. And other than your owner being like, trade him, your head coach, president of basketball operations, Tom Thibodeau's literally expressed multiple times he doesn't want to trade you, and he's going to make the process difficult. Jimmy Butler is just, if he ends up staying in Minnesota, like, I don't know how you have to play him because of his skill, but like, there's no way after something like this that Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns are going to want anything to do with him on the court. Fake or real players meeting aside, even if that players meeting existed and Jimmy Butler took the lead, I'm not sure how many guys are actually listening. I know that Woj reported that a lot of guys left practice on Wednesday feeling inspired by Jimmy Butler's effort and things like that. I don't care if your bench players feel inspired. I don't care if Jeff Teague's obviously mad because he's one of the ones that said the players meeting was fake, but I don't care if these nobodies are inspired because your superstars are supposed to be Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. The money speaks for itself. They're not leaving inspired when a dude walks in and tells them they're garbage and soft. And so Jimmy Butler is just, to me, his stock is just lowering, whether it's on the Timberwolves or another team. He's going and doing just a lot of confusing things. I mean, he has this blow up and then immediately, but pretty short after, has a one-on-one interview with Rachel Nichols about it. It's a tell-all. That's like a tell-all that like would happen 10, 15 years later. People are talking about like Kobe Bryant's mentality and not liking that other people aren't giving effort and comparing it to Jimmy Butler's. And I agree with that to some degree. Jimmy Butler's had to work for everything his whole life, starting at a JUCO and moving up. But I don't recall Kobe Bryant ever blowing up in a practice on all his teammates so that he can then have a press conference and express all his frustrations. I don't know. It's like I said, you can give your piece on it here, but Jimmy Butler's stock is trending down for me, and I still love him as a player, but all this off-field stuff, and whether it's his fault or Minnesota's fault, I don't know, but it's really confusing me, and I am not looking happy about a potential pursuit of Jimmy Butler if I'm a team looking for a trade.
I guess I agree with you to an extent. I guess Kobe did do something very similar, actually. He didn't have a press conference or anything, but he was always degrading his teammates at practice, especially.
Especially
in the post-Shaq, pre-Gasol era. He was definitely degrading his teammates, and that's something where I completely support Jimmy Butler, is when he's on the court talking smack to his teammates, telling them they can't win without him, they're not going to do anything, and then they don't do it. To me, that's a W for Jimmy. And I guess to where I agree with you, I guess we both did agree on this. He shouldn't be talking to the front office like that. And he definitely shouldn't. I don't think the interview is a bad look for him, for sure. I don't care how much issues you have with your team. At the end of the day, you're a team. And until you're off that team, you should still, at least to the media anyway, have a positive outlook. I mean, at practice, it's one thing when you're on the court. You can talk smack, run them as much as you want. That's something that I personally like. It's a trait that some of the best players to ever play have. But when it comes to off the court and just bashing them pretty much, it's not really something I can get behind. And I guess something else that I disagree with you, I don't think his stock is necessarily plummeting. It's a lot of drama, but it's situational, you know? He did this kind of when he was in Chicago, but not to this extent, obviously.
Oh, no.
But it's somewhat justifiable to me since, he just wants effort. He doesn't care if they're scrubs and they suck, which they don't, because Karl Anthony Towns is on his way to becoming one of the best offensive players in the league anyway. But they're not scrubs, so to have lack of heart and competitiveness from some players that have tremendous talent and potential is unacceptable, honestly. So Jimmy Butler, I feel like, is justified in that sense. But if I'm a team in any sort of contention for even a playoff spot, I'd take Jimmy Butler for, if I'm the Miami Heat, we're going to give up a lot, kind of, I'd say, for, even though Jimmy Butler said he would sign an extension, that's just his word, he could always go back on that. But, if I'm any sort of team in any sort of playoff contention, especially championship contention, I'm taking Jimmy Butler. Like, I don't care. He's one of the best two-way players in the league. He's a killer. He's not afraid of any moment. Something that would have been really cool, but super unlikely, was if the Rockets were able to get him. But that's pretty much, I don't know, I thought that was impossible from when I first heard that. But
from like a cap standpoint, that'd be really hard to do. I mean, I guess, like, before I get into that, because I will talk a little bit about the Rockets just because it's my team, y'all know. But I agree with his, like, his motives. I don't question Jimmy Butler's motives. I don't think he's doing it just to talk bad on guys. And, like, he obviously he's a 100% fierce competitor. He wants effort, the best effort out of everyone. And so when he sees guys with a ton of offensive talent and athleticism, like Cat and Wiggins, as he said in his interview, and they just don't work as hard as him, it's super frustrating. So, I mean, I agree with that, and I agree that he needs to get out, especially now. He can't play for the Timberwolves after this. I'm sorry. He just can't. And so I agree with his motives and things, but I just think that he didn't go about it in a very good way. Like you said, on the court, fine. On the court, by all means, talk smack, do whatever. Don't take it to an interview. Don't promote it in a way that, like, brings media attention to smack talk that probably goes on all throughout training camps. I can't imagine that some of these best players in the NBA aren't sitting there talking spit. Now, it's probably not on your other two best players on the team most of the time, but, like, it happens, and that's fine. And Jimmy Butler's totally justified in that. But bringing in the interview in the front office, those are things that I think we can both agree on are over the top.
Yeah, no doubt. I guess the interview itself really isn't off top, but the substance and content of the interview and him pretty much just bashing his teammates on national TV isn't something good. Personally in my life, I've had teammates that I didn't really like, but I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it's my teammate, so
yeah,
I'm not going to go out and bash him on national TV.
No, like, at the end of the day, they're your teammates, and, like, you're going to play with them, so you can't do that. But, I mean, I don't know, and it's really caused a stir in that the organization in general. They canceled practice the next day, canceled media the next day, supposedly at a players' meeting that everybody called fake, and Jimmy Butler didn't report with them to their final preseason game today on Friday. Thibodeau said he's back in Minnesota working on his conditioning. Well, I don't know. To me, that just sounds like we're not taking Jimmy Butler along because of all of this that's happened. I mean, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Gonna be a super interesting start to the season, though. So
definitely. I'm
watch
excited.
Out, watch out for that.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. Yeah, Jimmy Butler definitely needs to get traded, but I don't know if it's going to happen. I mean, the Heat were really the only serious suitors. I for a while, I thought it would be sweet to get him on the Rockets, even though it would be really hard to make it work cap-wise. But if anybody can do it, Daryl Morey can. I'm not sure if I still want that. Not because of his talent, obviously. Adding Jimmy Butler is an excellent 3-and-D wing that is just a beast. I mean, 3-and-D is probably even not due diligence or credit to Jimmy Butler as good as he is. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see the Rockets jumping through hoops to try and get Jimmy Butler, especially with all this. And one of the issues Jimmy Butler had with Fred Hoiberg was that he wanted to just hoist up threes. And yeah, I don't know. Last time I checked, D'Antoni and Daryl Morey liked to do that too. So I'm not sure he'd be the best fit. I mean, if he could get past not being allowed to shoot mid ranges, yeah, give me Jimmy Butler on the Rockets. But I don't know.
No, I could definitely see him not really getting along with James Harden. Because I'm not saying James Harden doesn't work hard or anything, but he definitely strikes me as someone who doesn't necessarily care as much as he should. especially in bigger moments. So, yeah, I could definitely see them beefing.
I would say James Harden. I mean, honestly, James Harden is like Mariners reference, but like Robinson Cano. I mean, the dude makes the game look easy. He makes offense look easy, and then he doesn't give as much effort on defense. Obviously, he's improved. I mean, James Harden's my guy, so I'm not going to bash him too much. He's improved on defense, but I mean, there's still James Harden is never going to give as much effort as Jimmy Butler, and I could really easily see that rubbing Jimmy Butler the wrong way. Maybe not if James Harden's dropping 30 a game, but I mean, I don't know. Jimmy Butler would definitely be playing like third fiddle in Houston, and based on the teams he wants to get traded to, I don't think he'd enjoy that at all.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He says he wants to win, but to be honest, like, Jimmy Butler as a first option isn't going to – like, yeah, you'll make the playoffs maybe when you first match up, depending on which conference you're in. But it's not getting you anywhere, really. Not trying to knock Jimmy Butler. That's just how talented the league is, really.
I mean, it is.
Like, Jimmy Butler maybe as a second option can be a part of a championship team, but he's definitely best suited as a third option. Like, obviously, he's not as good as a shooter as Klay Thompson, but similar to a role that Klay Thompson plays on a championship team, like limited touches, super efficient in the touches you get, which Jimmy Butler can be. He's pretty efficient. And just locking down on D, which is something he could easily do. So, I mean, that's kind of something where I'm a little confused because he says he wants to win. And, like, I'm not saying he doesn't because obviously he does the way he plays. But I'm just wondering to what extent that he wants to win. Like, does he want to win a championship or does he, like, what? Does he want to just get a higher seed or?
I can't. He wanted to go to the Nets and the Clippers. Those were two of his teams, and he says his priority is winning. No, Jimmy, your priority is to go be the number one guy and ball out, lead a team that doesn't have impending superstars like Karl Anthony Towns that are taking all the spotlight. I mean, obviously he wants to win, but it seems like he wants to win his way, and he wants to be the reason they're winning. Which he is in Minnesota, but he hates it there. And he hates it there because no matter what he does, Karl Anthony Towns is always going to be viewed as the better asset and the better piece for their team. I'm sorry, Jimmy Butler. As good as I think you are, as a number one option, your team is making the playoffs, maybe, as like an 8 seed in the East.
West.
East or in the, I don't know. If they're in the West, I don't think Jimmy Butler alone makes the playoffs.
Well, yeah, not alone. But I mean, like with anything,
I was assuming a trade. So, like, not with the Timberwolves. If he plays with the Timberwolves, I might have to just stop talking about Jimmy Butler completely. And just every episode, I'll say something bad about the Timberwolves organization. Like, how do you still have this guy on your roster? Beside the point, Jimmy Butler needs to get out of Minnesota. Whether he wants to win now or be the number one guy is confusing to me. I mean, he's going to have a hard time stumbling into a Boston Celtics situation. I mean, I know Kyrie Irving was really lucky when he wanted out to be his own and grow as a player. He stumbled into the best chance any team's had of beating the Warriors since the Rockets last year in the Celtics star-studded roster. I don't really see that being much of an option for Jimmy Butler. He needs to be traded though, and I kind of feel like it's gonna eventually be to the Heat, just because they're gonna be the last ones that are staying persistent in trade talks.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the Timberwolves already messed up getting anything of really good value for Jimmy Butler, especially that Miami trade wasn't a bad trade for them.
Not at all.
They were gonna get some good young pieces. I don't think you mentioned Bam. They were supposed to get Bam too.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, but Tibbs got a little too greedy. I guess he loves Jimmy Butler. Obviously, he coached in Chicago and now in Minnesota. But at the end of the day, it's a business, and if you have a deal that good, you should have taken it, and you're not going to get anything really remotely close to that anymore, even especially from the Heat, since you messed that up. But yeah, I mean, the sooner the better, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. All right, so that wraps up our show for you guys today. This is Big Red saying peace.
This is Average Ant saying until next time.